It's not often that I follow someone that has the microphone at the same level that I need it. I'm Denise Finney. I'm from Penn State University. And my talk today is on using diverse cover crop cocktails to provide agroecosystem services. And this is based on work I've done with Charlie White and Jason Kay, also at Penn State. Just want to acknowledge several individuals and lab groups that made this work possible, as well as the funding agencies that have supported this work. But it's broadly recognized that cover crops provide a number of benefits or services in agricultural systems, ranging from supporting nutrient cycling and storing soil carbon to reducing erosion, assisting in the management of weed and insect pests, and hopefully, ultimately, helping us improve profitability and crop yields. We're seeing in the Northeast and elsewhere in the United States is that farmers are interested in thinking about how they can increase the magnitude and breadth of services they're getting from their cover crops. And one way that farmers are doing this is by using multi-species cover crop mixtures or cocktails. And in fact, the most recent CTIC SAIR cover crop survey indicates that use of this practice is growing, and we expect to see an increase in the number of acres planted to these four species cocktails of 30% from last year to this year. So that's a significant interest on the part of farmers, yet there isn't a good deal of research on the costs and benefits of this practice, and that means there's also not a good deal of research-based information to help farmers utilize this practice in a cost-effective manner. So there is, however, theoretical evidence that using cover crop cocktails can, in fact, enhance the benefits we receive from cover crops. This evidence comes to us from the well-known biodiversity ecosystem function relationship in ecology, where we see that as we increase biological diversity along the x-axis, and often we think about this in terms of the number of species present in a system, as that increases, we see increases in ecosystem functions like biomass production, decomposition, and nutrient cycling. Now, given that these functions underlie the services we're interested in receiving from cover crops, it does seem plausible that using diverse cover crop cocktails can help us increase services from our cover crops. And in a number of completed and ongoing studies at Penn State, we're exploring this broad question: do multi-species cocktails, in fact, increase cover crop services? And today I want to talk to you about two specific questions that are critical to understanding the relationship between cover crop diversity and services. First, what cover crop characteristics drive specific services? And second, do cocktails optimize these characteristics relative to monocultures? And we explored these questions in a two-year field study in central Pennsylvania. We're working in a rotation that includes small grains and corn. So we plant our cover crops in August after the harvest of spring oats, and those cover crops are then terminate them in May prior to corn planting. And I should note that we're working in tilled systems, so tillage was used prior to the planting of cover crops and prior to the planting of corn. And this photo shows you cover crops as they looked in November, about 3 months after planting. Of course, a critical piece of this research is, how do we make these cocktails? What species do we use and how do we combine them? And as we thought about these cocktails, we wanted to enhance diversity in multiple dimensions. So we thought about having different phenological niches represented. So we have some species that are winter-killed species and others that are winter-hardy. We also thought about diversity in terms of nitrogen function from cover crops. So we're thinking here about having both nitrogen-fixing legume species as well as nitrogen-scavenging non-legumes. And when we look at these two dimensions, we see we have four kind of fundamental niches of cover crops. And so ultimately, we placed two species in each of these niches. And then we paired those niches to create a variety of four species mixes. So, for example, we combined overwintering legumes and overwintering non-legumes, so to create a four species cocktail that included hairy vetch and red clover, cereal rye, and canola. We also combined all 8 of the primary species in this experiment to create an 8-species cocktail, and I'll also note that we grew each of the species shown here in monoculture. We also wanted to test the idea of just increasing species richness or number of species without increasing the functional diversity of our cocktails. And to do this, we added 2 additional species to that fall non-legume niche to create an additional 4-species mix. We did the same in the overwintering non-legume niche. And then we have an 8-species mix combining all of the non-legumes in the experiment. So ultimately, 18 cover crop treatments, 8 monocultures, 7 4-species cocktails, 2 8-species cocktails, and a no cover crop control. We monitored above ground biomass production in both the fall and spring, and we sorted all of that biomass by species so we could also track species composition. In each of these cover crop systems, we measured 5 services. We measured nitrogen retention, measured the quantity of nitrogen in that above ground biomass. We also measured weed suppression. So these are the services that we measured in the cover crop season. We also followed 2 services in that subsequent corn growing season, the inorganic nitrogen supplied in each of our cover crop systems, and ultimately the corn yield following each cover crop system. We quantified our services relative to the no cover crop control. So for example, the yield service is the yield following the cover crop minus the yield following the no cover crop control. Now our first question was, what cover crop characteristics drive specific services? And to answer that question, we did a regression analysis in which we regressed quantity and quality against each service. So for example, on the left, you can see we used cover crop biomass as our predictor in that regression, and that's our indicator of quantity. And our response variable in this example is the yield service. On the right, you can see that our quality regression, and here we used cover crop carbon to nitrogen ratio as an indicator of quality, and again, used that as a predictor to look at the response variable of yield service. So then looking at all of those regression analyses, what we found is that in-season services were quantity-driven. So weed suppression, nitrogen retention, and above-ground biomass nitrogen were what we call quantity-driven, and we can see that for those services, cover crop quantity was a better predictor of service provision than cover crop quality. You can also see that in each of those biomass regressions, there is a plateau point. So you reach a certain biomass level, and above that, adding more biomass doesn't necessarily gain additional service provision. It's a bit different story for those subsequent corn season services, where we saw those were largely quality driven. So quality was a better predictor than quantity for nitrogen supply and corn yield in the subsequent cash crop season. So this gets at our first question, what are the specific drivers or characteristics that drive specific services? And we see that some cover crop services are quantity driven, others are quality driven. That leads us to think about our next question, which was, do cocktails actually optimize these characteristics relative to monocultures? And based on the biodiversity ecosystem function relationship I showed you earlier, we expected to see a positive relationship between the number of cover crops in our system shown on the x-axis and cover crop dry matter production shown on the y. And we do see we have a significant relationship that is positive. However, in this applied context of agriculture, we really need to consider whether or not this actually matters, right? It's not necessarily the mean level at each, the mean productivity at each level of diversity. What matters is really, can we achieve that minimum biomass that we need, that we saw in those plateaus, to provide the services we want? And, you know, if we consider something like a service that may be optimized when we have maximum biomass, what we see is that those cover crop cocktails didn't out-yield the highest performing monocultures. So what that means is for these quantity-driven services like weed suppression, nitrogen retention, above-ground biomass nitrogen, you know, cover crop monocultures may be the most cost-effective way to provide those services. But of course, we're thinking about, you know, a broader range of services where we've found that both quantity and quality matter. And the best way to visualize this is to look at the two-dimensional space of cover crop biomass on the x-axis and cover crop carbon to nitrogen ratio on the y-axis. And using the results of our regression analysis, we defined kind of the sweet spot in this two-dimensional space where we have the characteristics of the cover crop stand that we would expect to provide all of the services we measured. So this sweet spot falls below a carbon to nitrogen ratio of 21, above biomass production of 4,600 kilograms per hectare, and that's our sweet spot. And what we found in our study, our two-year study, was that the monocultures fell outside of the sweet spot. So we're showing year one in blue, year two in yellow. You can see cereal rye was way out of range. But things like canola and hairy vetch actually came pretty close to having the combination of quantity and quality that would support multiple services. And we can see in terms of service production averaged across years, both of those monocultures provided the services that we were looking for, but each also had somewhat of a fatal flaw. So on the first column, we're showing the percentage of weed suppressed, canola at 96% and hairy vetch at 88%. The second column is the quantity of nitrate nitrogen retained. You can see canola did a great job retaining 90% of nitrogen, but hairy vetch only retained 42% of the nitrate nitrogen that could have been leached. So that was kind of its fatal flaw. Both of these monocultures provided nitrogen in their above-ground biomass, but canola really suffered in terms of the quantity of inorganic nitrogen supplied relative to the control, as well as the fact that it led to a yield loss of 7% relative to the control. As you would expect, hairy vetch excelled at both inorganic nitrogen supply and support for a yield service. Looking then at our cocktails, we see that we did, in fact, have three cocktails that fell in the sweet spot, but again, only in the first year of the study. So those cocktails were radish, oat, clover, and vetch. Another four-species cocktail of canola, rye, clover, and vetch. And an eight-species cocktail in which we combined legumes and non-legumes. Looking at service provision by those cocktails, we see that all did an outstanding job suppressing weeds. All of those cocktails retain nitrate nitrogen, but we still see that issue of kind of lower nitrate retention by the radish, oat, clover, and vetch cocktail. All of them contributed biomass in their above ground biomass nitrogen. All of them supplied inorganic nitrogen in the subsequent crop season, and all of them led to yield gains relative to the control. And then the second year of the study, we saw that all of those cocktails moved out of the sweet spot due to shifts in the composition of that biomass. So the radish, oat, clover, and vetch, we saw a decrease in the amount of biomass from that cocktail, largely due to decreased productivity of legumes. On the other two mixes, we saw an increase in both carbon to nitrogen ratio and biomass, and we attribute that to dominance by cereal rye in the second year of the study in those specific cocktails. And this did have implications for the services provided by the cover crop cocktails. So these arrows show you whether or not that service was increased or decreased compared to the first year of the study in the second year of the study. So we see radish, oat, clover, and vetch. We saw an increase in nitrogen retention compared to the first year of the study, but that cocktail, like the other two, saw decreases in biomass nitrogen, inorganic nitrogen supplied during the corn season, and the yield gain achieved following that cover crop. It's worth noting that radish, oat, clover, and vetch still led to a yield increase relative to the control in the second year of the study. It was just a lower yield increase than we saw in the first year of the study. And the other two mixes, however, saw significant decreases in yield relative to the control in the second year of the study. So is it time for happy hour with cover crop cocktails? I think based on our results, you know, we would conclude that for quantity-driven services, again, thinking about weed suppression, nitrogen retention, above-ground biomass to nitrogen, monocultures may, in fact, be more cost-effective than cover crop cocktails. But we did see that cocktails have the capacity to optimize both cover crop quantity and quality, and therefore potentially support a broader range of the services we desire in our cover cropping systems. And based on the differences we saw between the first and second years of the study, you know, we would conclude that developing strategies to promote the optimal biomass distribution for multiple services is a critical next step for cover crop cocktail research. If you're interested in this topic, we have a paper coming out in Agronomy Journal. It's available online and should be in press in January. And we'll also be talking about strategies to quantify multifunctionality, so how we look at all of those services together, in a symposium tomorrow morning at ESA, and that's in Auditorium 1. Thank you.